Hey, are you hiring? If you answered yes, let Zentegra Staffing help staff your IT people needs. Head over to Zentegra.com/Zentegra Staffing to find out more. Zentegra Staffing, we can staff your IT people needs. Welcome to another edition of the Citrix Session with your hosts, Andy Whiteside and Bill Sutton, your source for all things Citrix.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 48 of the Citrix Session podcast. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. I've got, I don't have with me Bill Sutton today. Bill's our director of services, consulting services, and he is taking a well-deserved day off today and maybe a couple days this week, maybe the whole week. Honestly, I'm not even sure at this point, but I am fortunate to have with me David Johnson, who's a principal consultant for Citrix Consulting Services based out of Montreal, Canada. David, how's it going?
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
It's good. I appreciate you joining, and you and I were just chatting about the fact that we try to keep this podcast more on the technical side, and if we go marketing, it's technical marketing. So I appreciate you joining and covering your blog that was released a few days or a few weeks back, Citrix Tips, 10 Common Citrix Virtual Apps and Desktop Assessment Findings. I assume you do a lot of assessments?
Yeah, especially this year. Usually all over the place doing designs, implementations, but a common theme this year has been I've been on a lot of these types of engagements. So we review the Citrix environment and supporting infrastructure components, and really what you get out of it is a list of recommendations, that's really what the central theme was here. As I did a bunch in a row and I saw a lot of recurring themes, so figured this could help out with a lot of Citrix engineers out there.
Yeah, so I bet you make the assumption a lot of these things are no-brainers and that everybody has them covered, and then you do three or four assessments in a row. Wow, everybody had the same exact issue, which honestly is near and dear to my heart, because working with different clients all over the place and seeing them have the exact same issues, you're like, wow, who's helping everybody get connected to make sure that they're helping each other and see what other people are going through and attacking the challenges that other people have without, working in a vacuum.
Exactly. Yeah. Just things that you would consider more or less straightforward. That was another thing. Another, I guess, central theme about this one was like, try to keep them kind of a lower effort recommendations as well. Like things that you can low hanging fruit for a lot of these different organizations. So low effort, high impact items really was the goal here.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. So Citrix is not Citrix. I use Citrix as if it's a noun or even a verb sometimes, but it's not the most complex technology on the planet. It's not hard as developing an application end to end. However, it does touch a lot of stuff. So a lot of times people, in my humble opinion, overly trivialize Citrix, end-user compute, virtual apps, virtual desktops, and because they don't realize how much it touches and what all needs to be optimized. And the truth is, you could go in and do a project today over the course of the next month, and I could come in and find things that either were not quite right or probably more likely things that were made, a decision was made that could have been challenged, and vice versa, right? You could come in behind me and go, why'd you do it this way? And it's okay that we don't maybe agree on how we did it, but it's not okay if the customer doesn't understand it was a talking point, a decision tree, and they just got forced into something that they may have chosen differently had they known more about, which I think has a lot. Your assessments are great for help, at least vetting out that they know what they're doing right or wrong versus just doing things wrong without knowing it.
Right. Yeah. That's a important part of these assessments is not only figuring out the how, but the why, like the why this was configured this way, why, that piece is not necessarily straightforward. It gets to what you were talking about there is a lot of the time it'll really depend on the situation. Maybe it's something inherited, something that you're unsure where it's coming from, but at the end of the day, we'll call it out and, have the associated recommendation. So really depends, like the classic consulting answer, like it depends, but but yeah, still applicable, and we'll call it out.
Hey, are you doing more assessments this year because people have environments that are more strategic to their organization now, and they see that it's not quite optimal, and they want to get that tweaked, or is there a different reason?
Really depends on the situation. There's, I guess you can call different types of categories of assessments, you know, like a production readiness one is they're about to, they have a pre-prod environment ready to go. They just want to get the seal of approval. So I've had a lot of those this year. And maybe, I don't know if it was luck or just maybe COVID, you know, we're trying to get this environment ready and it's going to be our primary work from home platform. So we want to make sure that it's all up and running. Well, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of just yearly health checks as well. Some of the bigger customers get the yearly health checks just to see if everything's all up and running. I did work on, one thing that's more common these days is you're working on remote PC, obviously. We're trying to access, desktop stuff from an office location, a good way of doing that. Getting it spun up pretty quickly as a remote PC design or implementation. I've done some reviews on those implementations as well. So yeah, a little bit of everything, a little bit of a mixed bag, but yeah, not necessarily specifically COVID related, but you know, there's definitely some implications of, what COVID caused this year. So yeah, definitely looking at COVID specific things like work from home strategies and stuff way more this year, obviously.
Well, there's a reason you get your car inspected every year, right? So you can take a second look, and that
exactly
applies here.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's kind of jump into your blog. Sure. You may have covered the intro as to why the blog exists, but is there anything specific you want to call out in the intro that we didn't cover?
Well, no, I just wanted to make it clear that it's something, I guess, I think that these posts have already existed in the past. I think this is just more applicable to like 2020, I guess. I guess that's the only really thing that I would add to it. Is, you know, on top of COVID, on top of work from home strategies, just things that might have come up more recently than, you know, 2 years ago, let's say. Or maybe some of these findings weren't necessarily considered a risk or a recommendation maybe 2 to 3 years ago, but now they're more applicable. You know, security's top of mind. So yes, we definitely gear all these assessments more towards security, but I mean, obviously, all of like stability, resilience, supportability, that those are all obviously applicable here. So you'll see some security ones, you'll see some supportability ones. Really it's just the most common ones. And like I said, they do have a pretty big impact, but effort is debatable whether they're high or low, you know?
Well, let's start with your first one, which sounds like an easy one, but you can never be up to date, but you can at least prove that you've worked really hard to get as close as you can. So not up to date with known security vulnerabilities. Let's tackle that one.
Exactly. Yeah. Known. I mean, you know, these you'll constantly get new discovered vulnerabilities. So it's hard to, like you said, it's hard to be on top of this one. What we've done, that we've improved is, the Citrix Trust Center, where you can get, security alerts, figure out, you know, what product lines applicable to you and get a notification on if there was anything discovered recently. You know, for example, a classic one is, firmware that needs to be upgraded. And it says like the reasons why, maybe it's an older firmware that just has a known vulnerability, please upgrade, that type of thing. So things along those lines, it's if we take a look and we see, oh, this is actually this version, let's say product version is related to this specific vulnerability, we'll call it out for sure. And something to be addressed as soon as possible. But yeah, that's something that not too many people know about, but you can go to that Citrix Trust Center link and sign up for those, security bulletins for the different products. So just to be up to date, know where to look. That's really the main thing there. So that's a recurring theme for sure.
And you can almost be guaranteed you're going to be able to use that to find a lot of stuff every time, right? I mean, that's always going to be a finding, and you can never really totally avoid it, but.
Right. You do see customers that are up to date. Yeah. So I'm not going to fault everyone or whatever on that, but it's always something that I like to recommend and, to take a look at, on a regular basis for sure. We also
say up to date from a Citrix perspective, up to date, but what about Windows? What about every single application? What about hardware, firmware?
Exactly.
You'll find something if you look hard enough.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do find them, like, whether it's, you know, let's say, you know, VMware tools version that are not up to date, you know, there's so many different products out there that touch Citrix and a Citrix environment. Right. So this is just, obviously just speaking to Citrix, but obviously it applies to, you know, all the components that touch Citrix, right. All the way from, you know, hardware all the way up to your apps. So
yeah,
for sure.
Well, let's move to the next one. Cause at this rate, we're going to be here for 2 hours and I'm sure people love listening to us. Hopefully they listen to us at more than natural speed. But the next one, next one you have on here, if I went to do a project today, I would probably fail this one because I just historically did not use secure LDAP. But your next finding is Citrix Gateway LDAP authentication traffic is unencrypted. I bet you find that a lot.
Yes, I do find that a lot. I mean, so talking about, I look at, you know, not only the virtual apps and desktop side, I also take a look at the ADC gateway, things of that sort. So that's what I'm referring to here. So the gateway, you know, since you're usually in, when your gateway is for the most part, it'll be internet facing, right? You'll be in the DMZ, right? So your attack surface is exposed there. And you want to minimize any sort of unencrypted traffic that goes in to your internal network. And that's going to be using your secure LDAP there. You don't want to be passing credentials and clear text, and going in from a, public facing component or something located in DMZ. So this is an obvious one. Just secure it. It's really straightforward to do it. So go from port 389 to 636 and use an internal CA certificate. Easy to do.
So the next one you have on here is another common one.
It's related.
I'm going to ask this question first, though. Is the default encryption of the ICA protocol between your SNP in your DMZ and your VDA, is that good enough or does that need an extra level of encryption as well?
I think traditionally in the past we'd say, yeah, that's fine. But these days we're, because that authenticate, you know, in no trust is a top of mind, right? Implementing that for your environment is what we're talking about here. And so when we're talking about XML traffic, in this case, communication between storefront and your controllers, same thing. You're going to be out getting authentication traffic. You're going to be passing along user credentials with unencrypted traffic. We recommend to also secure it. Although you're internal, so you do bring up a good point. The traffic is internal. We just want to establish that zero trust policy there for security, under security stance there. So, you know, that's another one where, you know, traffic, that authentication traffic is being passed along and we just want to make sure it's easily done. Again, with an internal CA certificate can be easily done. So that's the reason why we're recommending that these days more and more.
Yeah. Okay, so then we'll move into the one that's actually in the article here, which is XML traffic between the storefront and the delivery controllers / cloud connectors is unencrypted.
Right. Exactly. So that's what I was saying before. Just we're authenticating. There's authentication traffic that's being passed along between storefront and the, you know, delivery controllers or storefront and the cloud connectors. So you're going to get that username password being passed along. Can easily be sniffed out and exposed if we have some sort of internal person trying to do an attack. So that's just the reason behind it. Maybe in the past five years ago, we might have not have said the same thing, but these days, that's our stance.
Do you find a lot of people turn off the encrypted nature of the traffic during the setup just to prove it works and then never forget, or they turn it off somewhere along the way to troubleshoot something and never forget to turn it back on?
Not really. It's just, I don't think they even think about it, to be honest. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
So yeah, it's unconscious incompetence, not conscious incompetence.
Yeah, I mean, like, oh, we'll get to it later. I think that the first thing you mentioned there is probably that. It's like, okay, let's just make sure it all communicates, and then we just never follow up and fix it. So, like, when you go into storefront, it's actually 443 by default, that traffic. You have to actually shut it off or go to port 80. So, yeah, it's probably what you were saying.
Yeah, these are all lining up with, if I were to go do an assessment today, these are some of the first things on the Citrix side of things I look for. Lack of intelligent load balancing of the delivery controllers, or yeah, you're probably going to say connectors, cloud connectors as well. But.
So, I mean, cloud connectors, actually, we don't necessarily, it's not a hard and fast rule for cloud connectors anymore. It's really more applicable to delivery controllers and storefront servers as well, if you have storefront in your environment. But really, what we're talking about here, load balancing, just, we know that you can select, you know, load balancing within your storefront server. They can actually do some load balancing of your cloud connect, of your actually both your cloud connectors and your delivery controllers. But at scale, we're definitely going to be recommending using something like a, you know, Citrix ADC to perform that load balancing. It's got those intelligent monitors that are built in. We look at the service levels. So we're looking at things like, for example, you know, trying to simulate kind of an app launch or trying to simulate the authentication service. So if that one service is down, it'll be out of the pool. So it's, you got some built-in intelligence there. It's more than an up, down ping if the server's up and running. If the service is not working, obviously it's, you're going to have issues. So that's the quote-unquote intelligence piece of it there.
David, are there any other load balancers out there besides the Citrix ADC that has built-in intelligence for load balancing these key Citrix components?
Not specifically for Citrix components. So we have the built-in nature of those monitors, or mainly for the, when we're talking about the, you know, quote unquote built-in service level intelligent monitoring, that's a mainly a Citrix ADC feature set there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Next topic here is end of life support for previous products. We get calls every once a month, at least somebody wants support for Zenap 6.5, and believe it or not, we still do it, best efforts. But of course, okay, it's just best efforts, and Integra does. But obviously, if somebody's on 6.5, we got a whole other conversation. You're talking about just fundamentally not on the supported versions of the 7.x or newer products, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This is the classic long-term service release versus current release discussion when we're talking about 7x and above. So the latest, you know, long-term service release version would be the 1912, meaning Citrix Virtual Apps and Desktops at 1912. And then the latest current release these days, 2009, I believe. Yeah, 2009. So really what we're, you know, the differences is there is the LTSR, long-term service release, you get 5-year support pending you're on the latest cumulative update. So that's what I'm saying here is that if you open up a support ticket and you're in a cumulative update version that's a little old or not the one, not the latest one, you might get asked to upgrade to the latest cumulative update, and that might actually solve your problem. So that's really what I'm saying there. Just be ahead of the curve. As soon as the next cumulative update gets released, start testing it out, seeing after, you know, testing your test environment. We really what we're doing there is releasing the latest bug fixes, increasing stability of the environment there. And then on the other side, that's the cumulative update on the long-term service release. And then on the current release, that's where you're going to be getting the latest features. And then there's a shorter term support there, right? 18 months. So just really depends on, doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter which you select. There's good reasons to select one over the other. But really just be on the latest version of either the cumulative update on the LTSR side or the current release as well. So that's really what we're saying there.
And you've got a helpful link. In fact, you even call it this helpful reference. Takes you straight to the latest versions, which I can't tell you how much time I've spent Googling trying to find that. You got it right here in the article, which makes it easy place to get it from.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of good references that, you know, the consultants know about. It's just trying to put them all in one spot here so you can take a read and take a look through all the links in there. Those are the usual suspects, I guess, when you're talking about those.
So we've had a couple of podcasts lately talking about localhost cache, which comes from the old days, which is now
right
back up in the new days of Citrix as a service type of operations, cloud, Citrix cloud, virtual app and desktop service. Obviously, knowing and understanding and making the most out of localhost cache is something every assessment will probably address.
Right, exactly. We're always trying to look at the, you know, quote unquote worst case scenario. And if we do have a situation where we lose connectivity between the delivery controller and the SQL database, that's when we rely on the localhost cache. So that localhost cache, you know, has a subset of the SQL database on it. So local to the either depends on your environment, cloud connector or delivery controller. And when you're in that mode, right, you get a primary elected controller that becomes your, you know, secondary broker. Really, when you're transitioning from a primary broker service to a secondary broker service, and when you're doing that transition and you're using your local DB, which is a SQL Express database local to your controller, there needs to be a re-registration process of your VDAs to the site. When that occurs, I mean, that's going to be directly proportional to the amount of cores available to the database. So really the recommendation here is, since there's a limitation on SQL Express, you're limited to a single CPU socket with four cores. That's the recommendation there, is to make sure that your cloud connectors and your delivery controllers are sized for a single socket and multiple cores, just so that re-registration process is quicker. We see a lot of customers, you know, standardizing on, you know, multiple sockets, multiple cores, which is leading practice in a virtualized environment. But when I'm talking about specifically for the connectors and delivery controllers, that's where the recommendation comes in, is the single socket, multiple cores. You just want to reduce the amount of outage time that you have. So that's going to be something that really helps with that.
Yeah. Oh, great. The next one is about SQL, right? And talking about SQL right being a single point of failure. I want to ask you a question. Is SQL as a service from Azure something that can be used in a Citrix environment today, or is it still for the on-prem solutions, just local SQL?
Good question. I don't think I've seen a customer environment use that service, to be honest. I'd have to get back to you on that one. But I believe 1912, right? We're limited these days to, if you're using a public cloud environment, you want to be using the Citrix Cloud Service. And if you're using the Citrix Cloud Service, that's when we manage your database for you, right? So, I think you're rarely going to see an occasion of when this is implemented, to be honest.
Yeah.
But what I'm referring to here specifically is SQL, like single point of failure. You don't want to be relying necessarily on your localhost cache as your plan B. You know, you want to have something that gives you automatic failover. If you have like multiple nodes of your SQL server, that, you know, you don't want to impact your users if one of your SQL servers goes down. So that's where I provide a link there to our recommended high availability for SQL. Again, this is more of those environments that are still managed completely by the customer there. So classic one we see is always on availability groups, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. You'll see in that link there that, you know, there's mirroring, there's clustering, there's more that you can do. But that's really it.
So SQL is still very, very important. Like you pointed out, that you moved to the service and that becomes moot point to you. So now it's a Citrix.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So the next one is antivirus exclusions. I can't tell you how many times we still run into this causing problems or performance related issues. And we work with a company called Bitdefender and CrowdStrike and Carbon Black. But the idea that maybe, I've always loved the idea of maybe you go to a Bitdefender and you say, okay, look, install this version of the product for a Citrix VDA, and all these exclusions will just be put in place. But nonetheless, antivirus, it's part of the story here still.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's always been part of the story. It's been there for a long time. I think AV's not necessarily been, nothing new, I don't think, here. But we, at least one thing that we have is a great resource that I link to, our TechZone article when it comes to any, you know, antivirus best practices there. So, and, you know, things about, you know, per component type, what are the exact directories and folders, processes that we want to exclude from you know, scanning on a day-to-day basis. And obviously you want to scan those on off time when users are not connected to them. We don't impact scalability or performance and make things go to a screeching halt if you're scanning in the middle of the day, you know? So yeah, definitely something that doesn't really get looked at too deeply for different teams. It just, I think it's kind of the last step. So it's like, we'll get to it later type situation, but at least we have a one place where we kind of list it all out for you. Don't necessarily have to go all the, you know, jump through hoops to find the recommendations there. It's all there. So my recommendation is follow that guide, and you should if you were experiencing issues with antivirus and slowing things down, it should definitely help putting those in place.
So the next, and on that topic, right, I think we had something the other week that broke our Citrix environment because of a Microsoft Defender update where there was no antivirus exclusions. Anyway, nonetheless, antivirus is still a big, it's a necessity.
It's still huge. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the next one here is the Citrix Optimizer tool. I'll tell you a story real quick. I sat through a session at Synergy a few years ago, and it was a 45-minute session. The first 43 minutes were how to optimize Windows 10. The last 2 minutes were how to optimize server, whatever, 2016 at the time. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't a whole lot to optimize. But nonetheless, in both cases, take a hard look at what the optimizer can and will do for you and let that be your starting point. Go ahead.
Exactly. And that's a good point. I mean, you'll see way more, I don't know, I want to say like bloatware or just things that are not necessarily applicable to a virtual environment. And for Windows 10, every single release, you have more and more things that are not necessarily recommended to be enabled, you know, I don't know if you need Xbox Live to be enabled, like in a virtual environment.
Well, at one point, Candy Crush was part of Windows 10 by default, wasn't it?
Something like that. Like we had a lot of built-in programs that, you know, suck up your scalability numbers there. But at the same time, you're also looking for scheduled tasks, things that are done that more maybe more applicable to a persistent standalone hardware endpoint, but not necessarily applicable to a VDI or remote desktop session, environment. So really that's what we're looking there is you analyze, provides you all the recommendations in terms of what's not needed and what's optional. So the optional stuff is, for example, is like Windows search. That's a point of, it really depends on the customer. Like, do we disable the indexing to improve scalability? That's the one side. And the other side is, oh, well, the user experience is a little bit hampered because now things take way longer to search if you go in the start menu. Yeah. So that's a point where it's not necessarily up to us. We give you the pros and cons, and then you decide whether or not it's right for you. But most of them are things that can be easily removed from the operating system or shut off.
And they improve performance as well as stability. I can tell you right now that my team has disabled Windows indexing and I get a little perturbed by it. But at the same time, I know I can log into my VDI at any point in time. It's going to be up and it's going to be working because all that junk's been removed. And one other comment on this, you know, back in my consulting days, 5-10 years ago, these 100 recommendations, you had to go through and do them one at a time. And that created a lot of consulting billable hours, but it wasn't the most efficient use of your time.
Right. Exactly. At least, I mean, we're always going to recommend sitting down and looking at things because, you know, you never know what's little service here and there is going to affect some of the apps that are installed on your images. So that's always going to be like a recommendation to sit down and look through line by line as it concerns your images. But I mean, at least I do like the fact that we have like that whole optional component piece. Like for example, the one we're talking about, the indexing of the Windows search, because that really depends, right? Depends on what type of user experience we want to provide the users.
Yeah. So our last one here, before we jump into this one, I'm going to apologize ahead of time for saying what I'm getting ready to say, because I know I offend people and do this a little bit. I say that jokingly, tongue in cheek. But Citrix provisioning services and optimizing the threads and ports before that, my comment is, I don't know why anybody uses PBS anymore. And that's coming from a guy who learned PBS early on and absolutely loved it. Pete Downing is our CTO, right? He came over with the Ardence acquisition. We all love PBS. We loved it at the time. But I think we're at a point where you no longer need it. And that's also coming from a guy who just started another hyper-converged company. Love PBS. Love what it did at the time. Don't think anybody should be using it anymore. However, when you are using it, let's make sure you're using it properly. All right, you're finding here is Citrix Provisioning Services PBS threads per port not configured optimally.
Yeah, exactly. And this is not a new one either. This has come up a lot, and we also I link a good blog article by Jeff Chu wrote it a few years back now. But you'd be surprised. Good point. But you'd be surprised to how many people are still using PBS, and even people using PBS. Citrix Cloud. We talk about it a little bit. So that's where most of the control plane is managed by Citrix, right? But things that could still be used, and that people might think are not applicable anymore, would be actually PBS. You could still use PBS for a resource location that is on-prem. So let's say you have the control piece managed by us, and then you can have multiple resource locations. You know, you can have your on-prem, maybe you're moving slowly to AWS, maybe you have a resource location in AWS. So for that one that's on-prem still, you can still use PBS. It's still connected to the cloud. You can use things like Citrix Virtual Desktop's setup wizard connected to the cloud and actually do some remote PowerShelling in there to be able to actually get your VDAs into the control plane. So it's still being used. I mean,
I bet it's being used a lot still. I mean, there's people that are.
Oh, yeah.
It's still a very viable solution, assuming the network is in the right place and everything's configured properly. And it's super flexible. That's the thing I do still love about it. It's super flexible.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. There's the best leading practices that we've developed are still very applicable, right? And this is one of them, right? Making sure that we just want to avoid any suboptimal streaming performance. So if we're having a high retry count, something involved is something's happening, right? One of the obvious checks is this one here is making sure that threads per port is configured properly, right? We always recommend since that blog was released to match your CPUs, vCPUs allocated to your PBS server to the threads per port setting. Unless you'd be in a situation where there's some queuing, where we have some target devices that are waiting for that session to be established, that type of thing. So just want to make sure that we're avoiding a situation like that and we're setting that properly.
So I'll tie this one and the antivirus one together. I had a situation a couple of years ago where a customer bought a $1.something million V-block so they could have fast intercommunication, fast storage, fast compute. But then they chose to use PBS. And so things weren't running well at all. I mean, it was horrific. And this was the second time in my career I ran into this, where PBS was having to read the entire disk for every one of the 5,000 machines that booted up from it. And it had nothing to do with optimization, which is what we originally started tweaking, trying to find out why it was falling over. It ended up being that the antivirus was demanding to see the entire drive and index the entire drive for each machine that booted up, and we were trying to turn on thousands at a time. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly.
The sad thing is, it took me a day or so to realize, hey, this is the same thing we saw a couple years ago somewhere else. And lots of finger pointing between the network team and the Citrix team.
Always finger pointing. That's a recurring one for sure. Yeah.
Well, David, thanks for jumping on and doing this. I would encourage people to just go take a look. I mean, Zintegra does a lot of free assessments. We do paid for assessments. If folks just will look at these and then reach out to myself or David, or just hit the community forums and ask additional questions beyond what David has here, which is really good information, you'll find a lot of things that you can solve a lot of the traditional challenges that Citrix environments face. And then when David or my team shows up, we'll have other things to help you discover and get better at.
Yeah, definitely not an exhaustive list, but definitely some places to look for sure.
It's the 10 most common, right?
Yep, most common.
Well, David, anything else? Is there any other finding that you know, you limited yourself to 10? I'm sure that was a really good number to use for this blog. Is there one that's not on here that you think you would want to call out to people as a number 11?
Test environment. Have a separate test environment. Yeah. You're not only looking at your images, are not the only important thing, right? If you're trying to plan for an upgrade of your infrastructure, your database, you want to have an extra one. You want to mirror that environment in a test environment to be able to test these things and not put off your upgrades because you're not sure if it's going to impact your production site. Well, you'll know if you do the upgrade in a test environment first.
So I'm going to use that as an opportunity to say this. I've recently started a hyperconverged, kind of I mentioned a minute ago, and one of the main things I love about it is that software-defined storage that I'm able to put out as part of this company doesn't cost much money, and you could run it on a set of Intel Nooks if you needed to. So, you know, I've got one customer who has a mirror environment. Their test environment mirrors their production environment. They've got more money than they know how to spend, but most customers can't. This allows you to take the same setup, but on much, much, much more cost-effective environment. In fact, most of my customers are just doing it using their older leftover desktops and laptops even. So it's not like for like from a performance perspective, but from a software perspective, it is like for like. People can have a true test environment that has some value that drives me nuts, not seeing any sort of a test environment. Or at best, they have one catalog and one delivery group where they test something and can call that valid testing. And I'm like, I'm sitting here going, maybe that counts.
Right. And a lot of these customers that are still on 6.5, the thing that they usually have in common is they don't have a test environment. But I could be generalizing there, but yeah.
Yeah, I won't pull it up here, but over the weekend, someone sent me a article on how to build a ESX environment on top of a VMware workstation running on Windows or Linux, but Windows or Mac, where you could, as long as you have 32 gigs or more, which isn't all that crazy. My laptop today has 64 gigs.
Right.
You could build a true production environment using VMware workstation to nest other hypervisors all within one place. It pretty much eliminates any excuse not to have some form of a test environment that's complete in terms of configuration and software.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I'm actually flying to Fort Lauderdale tonight, and I'm going to spend my time on the plane building out my lab, or at least starting to on my baby here, my laptop. It's 64 gigs. Finally, all these years of struggling to get stuff to work because I didn't have enough memory, and I've now got 64 carrying my bag. I'm extremely excited about it.
Awesome. Great.
All right, David. Well, I appreciate it. We'll have you back next time you write a blog. I don't see it, but feel free to reach out proactively and say, hey, I did another blog. Let's cover it.
We'll be having awesome.
A podcast together.
Sounds good to me.
All right, sir. Well, enjoy your, I guess, up in Canada, things shutting down in terms of weather. Is it starting to become winter? Or are you still enjoying
it? Still nice up here. We got the colors going, the nice reds and oranges and yellows in the trees. So it's... I'm not complaining. It's not too cold. So not yet.
Thank you for listening to the Citrix Session with your hosts, Andy Whiteside and Bill Sutton. A special thanks to our guest for attending today's podcast. Podcast produced by Pete Downing. For any input, or if you'd like to be a part of our podcast, please email us at info@Zentegra.com. Please head over to Zentegra.com/podcast to listen to all podcasts in this series. This podcast is copyrighted by Zentegra LLC.